Good afternoon, good evening, good metal. My name's Coop and welcome to the Spoken Metal Show. This episode's a great one. This is with Gravehoffer, Richie from Gravehoffer, all the way from Joplin, Missouri, which is a fantastic thing to do. It's, you know, we often talk about the internet and social media and technology being bad and what have you, but in reality, it means that I can talk to someone from across the world with a similar interest in metal as me, and also discover that person, discover that band through various streaming services as well. So I often try and, well, almost always try and put positive content out there and positive sort of experiences and a positive outlook on stuff, because it's so easy to be negative. It's so easy to pull down new things and new technologies and what have you. But in reality, you just have to look a little bit inward and find a positive and opportunity that exists everywhere. And so the ability to talk to someone from across the world is just fantastic. And I can't wait to see Gravehoffer live. I'll probably be going over to the States soon, and I really want to catch them live. But I mean, they're based in Joplin, Missouri. So I don't know, I'll have to catch them on tour, I guess, or when they maybe even come over to Europe. What a fantastic band. You know, we get into everything. We talk about the newest album, Depart From So Much Evil. We talk about a whole bunch of stuff as well. It's a really, really nice conversation. We'll have Richie on again, as I often say, because I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy talking to people who share the same interest in music as me. And if you do, I have a show on the 9th of November at the Outpost, where I'm going to be doing the Spoken Metal Show podcast live. I'm going to be live with two guests, a UK music solicitor and those music guys. We're also going to have some surprises and have a lot of fun. We're going to do some Q&A and involve the audience as well and talk, and you're going to be part of the show that you'll hear recorded. It's a really, really exciting thing to do. It's free. I'm only allowed 40 places to register, so please register before they all go. And then on the 18th of November, I have a bunch of live bands appearing. Same place at the Outpost, my spiritual home. And we've already got Mortala and Thrasher 2 we playing, and a band to be announced very soon as well. That's going to be £3 tickets, £5 on the door. Those two shows are the start of the Spoken Metal Show Live, and we go from there. So for now, please enjoy my conversation with Richie and Gravehoffer. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been looking forward to speaking to a member of this band for quite a while after discovering their latest album through a kind of a little sort of deep dive on extreme music. And certainly one of the most extreme releases that I've heard most recently is by this band. It's Gravehoffer, and it's really nice to sit down and get some time with Richie from Gravehoffer. Welcome to the show, sir.
Mark, thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it. And I think it's wonderful that the word is spreading through this type of medium and these means. And it's really cool that, you know, people are finding music out there just by doing the deep dive, and that it's there for people. So I think it's amazing.
That was one of the things that I think some people may have been initially afraid of. Especially extreme music, they may have been, we'll get lost. You won't be able to find us because there's so much out there. But actually,
right,
the reverse is true. You know, that if you're willing to look, even a cursory look, you can really deep dive and find some great artists, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So like go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, there's a slight lag. I'm talking, just so you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to Richie from, he's in Missouri at the moment, in St. Louis. And so there's a little bit of a lag every so often. So I'll allow Richie to speak, because otherwise it's going to go over to, but that's the other thing that's interesting, is that I can find a band from Missouri that I've never heard of and listen to their whole back catalogue, and it's fantastic, and I can experience that as well. That's a real, real bonus for extreme music, right?
It really is. And we're from Joplin, Missouri, actually. It's like 4 hours. We're like 4 hours west, basically, sure, southwest of St. Louis. But yeah, I just figured I'd point that out. But it is pretty cool. Like, even when we go play shows, like, most of the bands we play with are more underground. So most of my listening tastes come from playing shows with all these different bands that I've never heard before, or I'll just get into them because we were scheduled to play a show with these guys and girls. And it's like this whole new world opens up, and then you talk to them, and then they say, hey, how have you heard of these people or these people? And all the networking that's done and the communicating that's done when you hit the road is just a whole, it's a different world out there in the extreme underground, so to speak. Yeah. And I think it's one of the coolest things about doing what we do is diving into all that stuff that's out there, because it's just so much. There's so many bands and there's so much talent out there that just, it's hard to find unless you go to it.
Yeah. Well, it's, nothing's better. I mean, you can go on social media and put a video or put a song up, but nothing it gives you more impetus to go and check out an artist than another musician going, you need to check out this artist.
Exactly.
That's the biggest thing. If someone says, this band is heavy as shit, you are going to run to that band, If they say they're amazing, or you watch them live, you go, I'm checking out everything they've done. There's no bigger and more shining endorsement.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's incredible. Like, there's probably, I would say, within the last 10 years, well, probably the last 5 years, since we really started playing more shows out of our region, that I've discovered just a whole new world of bands. And it's just cool that when you meet these people, how small that world is, and it's like everybody knows everybody, but at the same time it's like, how did I not know these people? But I do.
Well, they're all using the same drummer, that's what happens.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god. Like our drummer, he's in like six or seven other bands.
But what's interesting, I find, talking to bands based in the US, is that as we already kind of alluded to, is that it's such a vast country. It's so massive. It's so far to go to see bands. It's difficult sometimes, you're 4 hours away from Missouri, and then, how easy is it to go and see bands where you're based? Is it a bit of a trek each time you want to go and see someone?
Yeah, really. I mean, the town we're in, we're right on the border. We're 10 miles from the Missouri-Kansas border, about 15 from the Missouri-Oklahoma border, and about 45 minutes north of Arkansas. And so we're in a really good place, actually, to where bigger towns are within an hour or two. And so we can see bands and play with some of those bands sometimes. But I know, compared to where you're from, it's still like when we got to play shows, that's a different story. We'll have to drive 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, at a time sometimes. And to play a scene that we haven't played before. And, so
is it then hilarious to you guys based in the States that we sometimes bemoan having to travel an hour to go to a show? Fans will go, oh, I'm not traveling an hour to go to another county for us, where you must be like, that's fucking an hour and I'm not even out the state. It's like,
it's funny. I've talked to quite a few Brits about that, and they're like, oh my god, I can't believe you guys drive all that way to go do this or that. And I was like, yeah, it's just the way it is, and like, oh, I gotta go 45 minutes, or whatever.
It's that perception. It's like, we're spoiled. We're absolutely spoiled. Yeah. You can travel to, sort of our major cities in an hour, 2 hours, maybe three at the most. And you can see all these bands, and all these bands play all these major cities. You can see someone play in London, then Manchester, then Liverpool, all in the space of 3 days very easily. You guys, that would take that's several states. It's a ridiculous amount of travel. Man. Ridiculous. So yeah. I like to start these things normally by talking about when music first enters your life, not necessarily heavy music, but any music of any kind. When does that begin for you, Richie?
Honestly, it was from my parents, and I was named after Richie Blackmore from Deep Purple. So my parents were really into the heavier side of things. And I remember being 4 or 5 years old and digging through my dad's vinyl. And I remember one of the first things I saw was Judas Priest, Unleashed in the East. Yeah. And this would have been like 1979 or something like that, 1980 maybe. And so that was pretty new. And I was like, whoa, all these guys dressed in leather and spikes and stuff. And KK Downing with his flying V. And I'm like, holy shit, I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe my dad was at work or my mom was doing something. So I was at home and I was like, I'm going to see what this sounds like. So I put the needle on and Exciter comes on. I'm like, whoa, oh my God. You know, it just blew my mind. And so, I mean, that, I mean, I think the heaviest thing I'd heard up until that point was like Kiss or something. Yeah. And so I'm like, Judas Priest just blew me away. And that's kind of what got me started on my like intense music journey. And, you know, then I think I saw a Black Sabbath record they had, like, I think maybe it was Heaven and Hell. And so, yeah, man, it was totally my parents. And
it's interesting that you bring up Judas Priest because they occupy this really interesting space between the Deep Purples and that type of thing before it moved into the quicker tempos. They brought in the quicker tempos and the dual guitar, which we'd had before with Lizzy and Wishbone Ash and stuff, but they made it a little bit heavier and a little bit faster. And then we got Slayer and bands like that after. They occupy this wonderful space in between there. When you listen to something like, you know, Rapid Fire off British Steel, that's like the sort of the building blocks of Thrasher kind of there, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Did you actually see any of the live stuff from Unleashed in the East? Did you actually see any of that as well?
Yeah, I've seen some stuff on YouTube. Yeah. Even stuff like before Rob started wearing the leather, where he's wearing the weird, like, polyester red outfits and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh my God, man. That's, but it's still like this really the double bass and heavy stuff. And
yeah,
it's like, it's cool when they found the look to go with it, you know?
Yeah.
But I love the 70s Priest, you know, that's some of my favorite because they were it was such a unique sound. And, I mean, I love all the Priest stuff and I've seen them probably 8 or 9 times, but, they're probably one of my biggest influences for sure.
Yeah. So you like, did your dad have more records by Priest? Did you kind of go from there? Did you start like, I mean, we're getting close to being British Steel and stuff. We're getting close to that. Did you just go out and that became your band then?
Yeah, it really did. And I'm trying to think. I think my dad, I think that was the only one he had, if I remember right. And then I think for my birthday a couple years later, my grandparents got me Point of Entry, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
And which I still have that from, it's in a, you know, 1981 or whenever it was.
Yeah.
And still sounds really good. And then I remember my dad got Screaming for Vengeance. And I was like, holy shit, man. You know what I mean? Just like, and then another turning point was when MTV used to play like entire concerts on, I think, Saturday nights or something. And the 1982 tour, I think it's like Live Vengeance or whatever, the DVD. But this was before VHS and DVD and all that. Well, MTV played that show and I guess the TV was on and my dad's like, hey, come in, family, come watch Judas Priest on TV. Gather around, watch the Priest. And so we all watched it and I was like, that was my first time seeing them perform. And so that did it for me. And like I still watch that show to this day for inspiration. I mean, even though it still has that intensity and it's inspiring. And what am I trying to say here? You know, I mean, but they still were a little cheeky and, you know, and fun. And so, you know, I loved all of that mixed together. So
Screaming for Vengeance was the album that broke them in America. Cause you had like, coming on and that was like a massive radio hit at the time.
Yes, it was.
That was absolutely huge. Even now going back, listening to Vengeance, the opening thing, Screaming for Vengeance, as Rob and just screaming for like, seems like forever. And the whole it's so heavy when you think about what they're doing, and so against the grain of what was going on out there. They got a radio hit out of you, got another thing coming, which is heavy. You know, that's a heavy tune for that time.
For sure.
So I mean, how long does it then before you kind of take your KK down and fanship to the next level and get guitar? You know, was it you go, okay, I've got to look like this guy, I'm buying guitar.
Yeah, actually, my first guitar was a Flying V, and it wasn't a Gibson, but it was like a Harmony or something. It was a red, and this would have been a few years later. It was probably like 88, maybe. And my parents bought me a guitar and a little combo amp for my birthday or Christmas that year. And yeah, man, I was all about it. And I had, you know, Priest posters and stuff on my wall. And by this time, I'd started listening to like thrash and stuff too. So I got into, like, I think Master of Puppets. I like, my brother had that cassette, and this would have been like 86, 87. I popped that in, I heard Battery, and I was like, oh my God, man. It just kept, the intensity kept ratcheting up, you know? And so,
and then I started. That's been the signature of metal. Every sort of couple of cycles is there's a band comes along that does something where we go even heavier than we thought we'd go, even faster than we thought we'd go, even more in your face than we thought you would go. And, you know, like I say, Judas Priest kind of started that in the sort of late 70s, early 80s. And then you have bands like Anthrax and Metallica and Slayer, you know, come along and go, okay, well, we're going to go, we'll look even more like we're from the streets. We'll just dress like everybody else. And, you know, we'll play even heavier and even faster. And then, you know, every sort of, you know, a couple of years it seems to have that cyclical thing where it kind of goes, you know, you go back and someone goes, listen to this. This is really fucking heavy. And that kind of gets reinvented. I don't know if there's any form of music that does that because it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't seem like it. Because I remember, you know, it was the Priest and that kind of thing. And then it was more the thrash. It kind of morphed into the thrash metal. And then that morphed into like death metal. And, you know, I remember I got my guitar and then I started reading guitar magazines. And then I saw an interview with Morbid Angel and I was like, whoa, holy shit. He plays a Flying V too. And then I'd never heard him. And on a whim, I bought this album, Blessed Are the Sick. And I think it may have been CD. I bought the CD and I put that in. And I was like, I'd never heard death metal vocals before. I'd never heard blast beats before. I was like, what the hell is this? I wasn't even sure if I liked it or not. Wow. But I listened to it. You know, I was like, I didn't know what to think. And I was just took my brain a little bit to comprehend what I was hearing. Yeah. And I was like, it was so intriguing. And then I think the second time I listened to it, I kind of got it. Yeah. And I was like, I think I bought that and Godflesh Street Cleaner on the same day. And wow. So
that's an epiphany right there, isn't it?
Yeah, a completely opposite side of the spectrum, but it's still like, and I was like, both of those albums almost kind of scared the shit out of me, you know, and I was like, this music is like kind of scary. And I mean, I'd already listened to Slayer and all that prior, but this just took it to a different realm.
Well,
almost,
because the direction that, like, kind of, you know, certainly Godflesh went was, we're not going to go necessarily the heavy way and the faster way. We're going to go in the more dissonance and messing with really, you know, kind of like, we're going to challenge this what perception of what the sound can be and what you can do vocally. We're going to challenge that now. And you know, that's the other thing that I think metal really doesn't share with any other music is that it can be initially quite challenging, abrasive to the ears, where you're like, I don't quite get this. It's like you say, it almost scares me. I don't understand it. Death metal was like that for me at first. There was an initial like, what the hell? And then slowly you find your inroads, you find your things. Yeah. And you go, okay, I kind of understand it. Now you get to the stage where we are now when we listen to these things. I know good and I know bad and I know when it's done well and when it's done badly. And you can hear it. But at the time, there's that little period where you're like, I know it's good, but I don't know why. It's scary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. It's like, holy shit, man. Like, these are humans playing this. You know, it's just, you don't even know, like, what they're doing almost. Like, it took a little bit to grasp, like, the technique and what they're doing. Because I like to really understand the music when I'm listening to it, you know. Sometimes I wish I could just listen to music and enjoy it for what it is without breaking it down and dissecting it. But to me, I guess to my brain, that's part of enjoying it, I guess, you know? And, so yeah, that was it for me. And, Yeah, I mean, it's and then I started getting more into grind, like Napalm Death and Brutal Truth and stuff like that. And yeah, it's all these different, it's all these different ways of approaching it with different, like I know grind had more of a hardcore punk influence, you know, and yeah. You know, some of the stuff was political and, you know, lyrically and everything. And then death metal was more like influenced by Slayer as far as like the imagery and stuff like that. And it's just like everything, they just took it a notch further. And then some of the stuff had different influences by the imagery and the content and the lyrics and stuff were different. And that well, would,
I think what
almost
what happened,
make it a different genre.
Yeah. Well, what happened, I think, that was that we, as metal musicians and them as metal musicians, just took the things that they liked, be it musically or from an energy point of view, and put it in sort of music. So Slayer, you know, wore their punk sort of fanship on their sleeves, and they brought that into that. And then the hardcore and stuff, bands like the Cro-Mags brought in, like, in Converge, you know, brought in hardcore elements because, well, we like to really kind of get involved in a show and that type of thing. And then the political thing kind of came in that as well. And then, you know, they liked horror films and disturbing imagery and challenging imagery. Well, that kind of went hand in hand, you know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're getting Napalm Death, where it's like politically charged, punk orientated, but with a heavy thing. And Bill Steer's kind of still playing almost like metal riffs, but he's not.
Right.
And it kind of grows into this wonderful thing. And it's always been that way. Metal's like, hasn't been a closed door, I don't think. I think it's been very open to going, okay, we like what's going over there. How can we bring that into our world? You know, and that happened. Mm-hmm. Some of the best stuff, I think, like Brutal Truth don't get anywhere near as much, you know, credence as I think they should do for what they did for the genre.
Oh,
you
know,
what they brought in was massive, you know, a real seismic change. With a lot of bands ran because Brutal Truth walked that first initial, you know, couple of albums, you know.
For sure, yeah.
So when did it go from, you know, kind of listening to this stuff and, you know, attempting to play it, but then going to see it live?
Yeah.
What's the first shows?
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember some of the first shows. I was even into a little bit of the hair metal and stuff. Like,
sure.
I like, you know, Dawkins and Rat and stuff like that. And I even like rock, like Tesla. Like, my first concert was Tesla.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just kind of was into everything. And then I remember the first, like, real heavy thing I saw was probably, you know, I mean, I saw Metallica and stuff like that in, like, 90, 91, something like that. Black Album era, I believe. Yeah, I didn't start going to concerts till I was like mid-teens, and I'm trying to think. I think my first like death metal show may have been I think it was Morbid Angel, At the Gates, and Dissection.
Wow,
I believe that was like that was amazing before I knew it was amazing. You know, like every time I tell people about that, they're like, "Oh my god, that lineup's," because it was something. It was probably the most violent show I've ever been to. This was like 90 Domination tours when it was.
Yeah.
And I think Slaughter of the Soul just came out, and Storm of the Lights, Bane maybe just came out. And so yeah, that was, it was unreal. And it was in St. Louis, in this, you know, not very big place, but it was so packed. And they had these big, like wood, they had these big like pillars in the middle of the pit. I saw people bouncing off that thing. it was painful to watch almost.
It's funny you say, like, at the time you didn't realize, like now, you know, the average sort of metal fan would be like, oh my god, that's like the, you'll never see that show again. And that was like the best, you'll see it at the best time for most of those artists, and At the Gates and stuff you're never going to see again. You know, at the time you're just like, it's just another great show. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, looking back on stuff like that, it's like, and then you talk to younger people and they're like, oh my god, they like trip, you know. And then my thing with Priest, like I never got to see Priest until 2003, I think.
Whoa.
when Rob came back.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool because it was at an Ozfest, and the last three bands were Slayer, Judas Priest, and Black Sabbath.
Perfect.
And then, you know, at the time I was even like, this is badass. And I'm still like, Jesus Christ, that was really cool. Yeah. And when Judas Priest played, it started storming and it was lightning. It was so awesome. And, you know, I had tears. I had tears.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Because Rob Halford's like one of the so inspiring. Been
around long enough to, they were the I'm a Priest guy too. They were the first kind of band for me. And I've seen them go all the way from, you know, the old Great Whistle Test where Rob's got it like long blonde hair and a big hat on, all the way through.
His sister's, he borrowed his sister's like satin all blouse or whatever.
When they looked like during Turbo when they had all that Star Trek almost stuff on.
Yeah.
All the way through to Painkiller when they were like, it's like metal, it's, you know, to the nth degree, to now where they, what they've become. And so I can kind of enjoy them on a number of levels where I enjoy them because I'm watching them as a 15-year-old kid watching them. And now I'm enjoying them as a guy who plays guitar and been in bands and stuff and enjoying them. That's one of the great things about their longevity. And it's probably because, and this is the other thing that gets leveled against metal, is that it doesn't grow or change or evolve. Bands don't do that. And the reality is that's just nonsense. You know,
we've seen Priest
massively evolve. You know, that album you talked about, Point of Entry, was almost experimental for them. It wasn't very successful. They were tried. It was a different cover and a different approach. You know, Metallica changed their look for the Black Album and the sound for the Black Album.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Even like, you know, sort of Morbid Angel went through various things to change to try and look at what they did. And I think that's the thing that also gets leveled at metal music that is unfair, is that it doesn't change, it doesn't evolve. It's just one note. It's just one tone. That's just not true, right?
Oh, no, for sure. Like a lot of the bands that I really enjoy are bands that have this evolution in their sound, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I guess that's probably why I like Priest so much, because like, they just have so many different facets to what they do. And, you know, same with Morbid Angel and Metallica and bands like that. Like, sometimes it's not to people's taste or whatever. You know, they just want to hear the same thing over and over and over. You know, even people like to say that about AC/DC. And, yeah, a little, but I assume, you know, I could see that a little bit. But even them, like the Bon Scott stuff, that's my favorite. But you know, like they still go in these different kind of areas, you know. I just don't think people like listen to it, you know. They just, there's a lot of assumption going on. And
it gets brought up a lot, and I try to kind of, the only way I can kind of put it to people that maybe don't follow AC/DC when they say it's the same album for the last 40, 50 years, which is just not true. If you listen to the song The Razor's Edge from the album The Razor's Edge, that is nothing like what AC/DC you're thinking of. If you listen to Knights of the Long Knives off For Those About to Rock,
that's
a totally different song to, you know, to, and then even Down Payment Blues from the Bon Scott era. It isn't the same song as the hit, so to speak. You know, and it's tough. That must fucking, I don't know how much it infuriates AC/DC where they're like, we like different stuff. What the fuck? We're not just the same riff over and over again.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Madden, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Like, I love AC/DC. And I mean, I have eras that I'm more partial to, I guess, but I even like some of the stuff that people don't like Flick of the Switch and stuff, you know? Like,
great album. Yeah.
I love that record.
Blow Up Your Video doesn't get enough props. That's a fucking great album. Yeah.
I thought they brought it with that record. I love that album.
So when does it go from, you know, you're seeing bands, you're playing now, you go, okay, I'd like to play with some of the musicians. When's that start?
That was probably my high school years, like 92, 93. That was definitely when I started getting in bands. And like, I remember the first band I played in, and we had this, I don't even know what you would call it, but it was more of like a Slayer kind of thing, you know. And we did the Metallica covers and shit like that. But we wrote a lot of our own music too. And it was like almost like Slayer, but a little more progressive, like some of the Master of Puppets era Metallica stuff. Because our singer had that Tom Araya kind of yelling in key, some kind of thing, you know. And we had two guitar players and lots of double bass. And, you know, so, yeah, it was definitely like a Slayer Metallica mashup, if I'm going to mention it. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense to me when I hear that stuff.
What was the name of the band, Rich?
It was it was called Sakura. I don't even know what that means.
Sakura.
Sakura. S-E-K-O-R-A.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and our logo was kind of styled like Obituary's logo. And so, yeah, and it's funny. We didn't really play death metal, but some of the riffs were a little like Morbid Angels, the slower stuff. And in other words, we had a lot of parts. Our songs were all 6 and 7 minutes long, and yeah, we were, you know, it was definitely that type of thing.
Yeah,
and yeah, we only played like a few shows, but we should have played more. But our drummer was like, he had real bad stage fright, and so it was hard to get. It's kind of hard to get him to commit to things. And but the bass player and the guitarist, like, I still talk to them to this day. Like the other guitar player, I was in a band with him after that, and then he does mastering now, so he masters all of our vinyl and stuff like that. So,
when did you kind of go to being a band that you would play outside of high school, maybe in bars and that type of thing? When did it kind of move to that?
Well, that was probably 97, 98. One of the other guitarist in Sakura, his name's Gary, and we had this little two-man project. So we were roommates at the time, and it was called Satan's Ice Cream Truck. And there's a Strappy Young Lad song that's it's a hidden track, and that's what it was called. So we called it that, and we had shirts made and everything. And actually, we went to see Strappy Young Lad. We had just missed him, and we ran into Devin Townsend coming out of the building, and we're like, oh, hey, did you guys already play? He's like, oh yeah, sorry. And we're like, wow, we just missed it, because we got lost in the city we were in. And so he literally told the merch person to give us free t-shirts. Which I still got. I got Scrappy Lad City. And so we gave him a Satan's Ice Cream Truck shirt that we had. And he's like, oh my god, this is awesome. And so we got permission from him to use the name.
That's cool.
And yeah, it was really cool. And it was like this real weird kind of experimental stuff. And then it morphed into more of like if Godflesh had blast beats, I guess. You know, just like, it was just like real kind of grind stuff with the drum machine, because he played bass and I played guitar. And we put like 3 or 4 cassettes out, and we played live and stuff. And we played like at all ages places, like skate parks and stuff like that around the area. And then we both were asked to join this crust punk band called Initial Detonation.
Detonation, yeah.
Yeah. And then that's kind of when it really started, kind of, you know, we started touring and stuff then. And we played all over the country. We played in Canada. And we put out a couple of 7 inches. And the bass player and the drummer in that band, we formed Gravehuffer. Well, Crom, I guess, is what we called it then, in 2008. Yeah. It was like from 2000 to 2008, I was kind of out of music altogether. You know, I'd got married and was having kids. And I thought, oh, I'll concentrate on that. And I didn't really, like, I knew something was missing in my life. And, you know, music meant too much. And so the guys they were called Ether Bunny at the time. And our bass player at the time was playing guitar, and they had another bass player, and I guess he was kind of a pain in the ass. And so he's like, I want to switch back to bass. And he goes, hey man, would you want to play guitar in this band? And that's where we've been ever since.
Tell me there was a moment, Richie, when you hadn't played for so long.
Yeah.
You go, okay, we've got a jam on Sunday at 3 o'clock or whatever it is. You go upstairs into a loft or into a garage. Yep. And you flick the things on a guitar case. It opens and there's a guitar, and you haven't played for however many years. You plug it in. Is there a moment when you're like, "Oh my god, I miss this"?
Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah, I remember that first practice like it was yesterday. Yeah. I really do. But I still had all my gear. You know, I didn't sell anything, thankfully. You know, I still had guitars. I still had an amp and a cabinet, and I still had all that stuff. And I was actually kind of working into it a little bit. I was like, I re-recorded some of those old Sakura songs just to kind of get my chops back up. And you know, I recorded them on a 4-track I had. And I started even doing some vocal things because I do a lot of backing vocals. And you know, I was just kind of getting prepared. And then they sent me the songs they had, and so I you know, I learned all the songs. And then that first practice, you can play in a room and record and do all that stuff all day, but it's not until you get in a room with the drums and the bass and the vocals and the PA that's when it really hits. You know, that's when it's like, yes, I missed this. And it was, you know, because it's just a different animal. And I like playing live more than any of the other stuff. I love creating, of course, but I want to jam. I want to play it with the guys, you know.
Was it quick then from you going, okay, I'm coming back, I've learned the set, I've learned what we're doing. How soon was it to get into a gig then as Grave Huffer?
I think it was like 3 months.
Okay.
And yeah, our first gig was about 3 months after we started practicing. And it was a Halloween show, and it was in this tiny, tiny bar. Like, you literally, you load into the stage. Like, the back door was right onto the stage.
We've all been there,
Yeah. And we all were like, okay, we're going to dress up. So I dressed up as King Diamond. I had the top hat and the makeup. My wife did my makeup. And I had a cape and all that stuff. It was so fun. And like, there was just, it was absolute mayhem. Like, it was just, the place was just packed. And part of it was like, we had been in bands before. And so there basically people came to see what the old Initial Detonation guys were up to.
Right.
Cause we were one of the bigger bands around the scene in the late '90s. And so they're like, oh, it's a, and they're like, wow, this is like way different than Initial Detonation, you know? And but it still has some of that. We still have some of that crust punk thing going on.
It feels like it's a weird passing of the baton from yourself to yourself.
It is.
You know what I mean? It's like, okay, that band was good and it was great, but you know, we've gone away, done our thing, and now this is now the kind of where we were leading to, you know. That's an interesting sort of, it's an interesting way to kind of, did you get a good reaction? I assume so.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. Like, that's still one of my favorite shows I've ever played, the first time when we came back. And now our bass player Mike and our drummer at the time Larry, they had been doing stuff and playing shows here and there. They were in a band called Freak Flag, and which is a Jimi Hendrix reference. And it was more like, I can't even explain it. Like, initially it started out as like kind of a weird experimental ambient thing, and then it morphed into a band, kind of like our Satan's Ice Cream Truck thing.
Yeah.
And they would play, if I had to, kind of a cross between Motorhead and Clutch, if I had to explain it. Yeah, it was like this kind of like, had a good drive to it, but kind of like more of a fuzzy Sabbath-y kind of riffage, but with like a punk rock backbeat to it. And but then they also did kind of the weird stuff on top of that. And so it was really cool stuff. And they had a little bit of a following as well. And so when that all morphed together into what we're doing, people were like, wow, this is going to be pretty wild. And it was even different to all that other stuff. And you know,
ladies and gentlemen, when you go and listen to Grave Huffer, and we're going to talk about the newest album, because we could really deep dive on a lot of the albums, there's an incredible amount of variety. You know, you think of something like, you know, Dead Peace has got like a whole bunch of punk in there. There's some punk going on there. You know, Circle of Blood is another. These are all like kind of, you can hear the influences, but you know, no one song is it's going, it is truly experimental. You know, each album I found was like, was fascinating in so much as you did not know what you were going to get next, which was exciting. You know,
nice. Yeah.
Was that intentional then to go, listen, we're going to go in several different directions that we enjoy, and just take that to where we want to go? Was that kind of the whole sort of layup for why he wants to play in Gravehover?
No, it really wasn't intentional, right, as much as I want to admit it. I mean, we just kind of pick up our stuff and just start playing. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't want it to sound like we're being aloof.
No, that's,
you know, or, you know, it's just kind of what comes out, I guess. We're just real natural about how we approach it. We don't really think too far about, or think ahead too much about what we're going to play. It's kind of like whatever mood we're in at the time, to but be honest.
You know, what's interesting about that, and I agree that that's why I think it sounds so interesting and you know, it's enjoyable to listen to in that respect, is because you've took all the things that your heroes have done and employed those things, either knowingly or unknowingly, where you've gone, we're going to play what we enjoy. One song's going to sound like this because we like this, and then the next song's going to sound like this because we like that. That's, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, maybe hampers some bands that go, okay, well, we're going to be this type of band, insert whatever adjectives you're going to be in, whatever, you know, where you want to describe a band, and play to those things. You are not that. You are playing like you said, you're going to be a couple of guys going to get in a room. Whatever comes out is what we're playing, and be it, then you could decide what that's called later.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's honestly it. And I'm not going to say everything we pick up and play makes it to the record, but you know, cause we do throw stuff out. You know, I mean, there are sometimes we'll jam on something like, I'm just not really feeling this, you know. Maybe initially you liked it, but when you put the whole band into it, it just doesn't work or whatever, for whatever reason. But there have been a handful of ideas where that's been the case. But the rest of the guys are like, no, dude, we really like this. And they'll outvote the guy that doesn't like it, you know? And those have turned into things that people enjoy almost the best, like Shut Up and Skate. Like, that almost did not make the record. And because it is pretty different sounding. And it almost sounds like Mike, our bass player, was the guy who pretty much wrote that one. And it almost sounds like the band he used to be in, like, he was in a band called Squirm, and it almost sounds like them. And this was like early 90s kind of thing. And, you know, it's more of the, it's got kind of this, he mentions Husker Du quite a bit when it comes to that kind of thing. And like, cause we listen to so much music.
Yeah.
And so it kind of makes it in there.
I didn't get the initial, but when you say Husker Du, it's like, you know, there is Zen Arcade stuff going on there. Yeah, there is. Yeah. It's only when you mention that, that's interesting. Yeah. But isn't that the whole point, Rich, is that you're meant to take all the stuff you like, whatever genre it's from, you listen to it all, and whatever comes out from that is your style, is your kind of sound, you know, and whatever it is, the rivers that run into that is whatever they are.
Yeah, it is weird. Like, you never, that's what's exciting about writing, I guess, is you never know what you're going to, like, you may walk into the rehearsal space and you have no clue what's going to happen. And you may walk out with three or four songs and you're like, whoa, what just happened? You know, like, cause sometimes it's like, this stuff is just wild. You know, we wrote some stuff a couple weeks ago and I don't even know what to think of it. You know, it's just like, that's exciting,
listening to your back catalog, you know, I don't know what's coming next. That's exciting to me. You know, I know it's the framework that's going to be. It'll be heavy and challenging and aggressive,
for
want of a better word. Yeah, brutal. Yeah. I know that'll be this, but I don't know what's going to be. When I first kind of loaded up the new album, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to get here. And that's exciting in a world where, you know, there is a lot of banal music and a lot of kind of, you know, superficial music and music played, you know, for almost, you know, by committee. It's nice to have that, you know, it's nice to have that kind of still, we're still challenged. We're still going, okay, well, like you said, you know, I don't quite know what to think about this yet. I'm going to have to listen to it and decide. Yeah. I don't know, you know, Depart From So Much Evil, the title track of the album, I don't know what I feel about that yet. It's 20 minutes of
right.
of something. I kept listening, but I was like, wow, okay. This is so when did you start writing for that album, or this album, I should say?
Yeah. Yeah, we actually wrote the title track first.
Right.
Which is weird, but because the initial idea we had was we were going to do a split, and that was going to be our side of the split, and then we're going to do a split with another band. Well, the other band already had their stuff ready to release, basically, and we had just started writing. And so we kind of had to abandon that idea, and we're like, well, I guess we got to make a record. And so my challenge to the guys was, why don't we all do our homework and every guy in the band write a song on their own? And that's the first side of the record. It's like basically everybody's solo stuff.
Yeah.
If you want to call it that. But then we all got together and learned the parts and recorded it, and, you know. But yeah, the Depart song, you know, that was Dante's Divine Comedy, Inferno, Purgatory, Paradise.
Yeah.
And Mike and I have been kicking that idea around for, geez, I think we may have, in the initial Detonation days, even were talking about it. So this is something that's been bopping around in our heads since the late 90s. And I don't know why we thought now was a good time, but we did. So
that's interesting as well, that, you know, that you have an idea like that, that it takes, you know, however many years pass by, 10, 20, whatever years it is, that you finally kind of go, okay, I think now we've got the right thing to make that a finished article. You know, it reminds me of a long time ago, when Frank Zappa released a guitar solo on a record that he'd sped up. This was when doing such a thing was quite a new thing. And he'd sped the guitar up because he wanted it to sound a certain way. And people kicked off about it and said, you know, that's not how you're not meant to abuse technology. This was, you know, the 70s. And then later on, he learned to play that quickly anyway, because his ability caught up with his ideas, you know.
Exactly.
And that sounds like what happened with Depart, is that your ability, your knowledge of what you were doing as musicians caught up to the idea to take it to fruition, which is fascinating to me. You know, I also love the idea that everybody wrote something or had a writing credit with the album. That's not something you see in other music. So you find it a lot where it's normally dual partnership or one sole writer.
Sure.
Yeah. Bringing in and allowing, you know, I'll call it the Les Binks factor on this. Bringing in someone to write something like Les Binks, the drummer, former drummer of Judas Priest, wrote Beyond the Realms of Death, that little bit at the beginning.
Oh, you know.
We might have not got that, and possibly Glenn Tipton's greatest solo of all time, if they hadn't said to the drummer, you know, you can write stuff too and bring it to the table. You know, what happened? Was there a moment where you said, okay, guys, go away and do that? And they did, or did you already have ideas and they were trying to get a forum for them?
I think there was, like our bass player, like, I don't know if he had, I think he just came up with the inside of his head. I don't know if I'd want to live in there. Like, the stuff that bounces around in his head is wild. Like, he comes up with the most crazy stuff, and his song is The Cryptid and the Iron Bird.
Yeah.
And which that is one of my favorites. And
it's definitely one of the wildest songs on there. Yeah.
Definitely. And so he comes up with this idea that, you know, a cryptid, Bigfoot, like, he's this intergalactic time traveler and blah, blah, you know, the stuff he comes up with is insane. And so he I don't think he wrote the lyrics as such, but Travis wrote the lyrics, and but he gave Travis the idea and what he wanted to happen. And then Travis wrote the words and we went from there. But Mike wrote all that music.
It must be nice as well, from a guitar playing point of view, to be challenged by someone going, okay, well, I've come up with this, which maybe isn't in your wheelhouse or something you would normally do. And then you go and kind of, okay, well, I'm going to have to come up with something interesting for this. And that's challenging. And
it is.
That's when you grow as a musician, right?
It really is. Yeah. Cause there was this one point in the song where it slows down, where he plays this weird thing. And I'm like, I would never come up with that. You know? And so, yeah, exactly like you're saying, like it does challenge you to come up with some new technique that you never really thought of. And Mike's the same way with me. Like I'll play something. He's like, where's the one? And, you know,
have you had the chance to,
where's the turnaround?
Any of this live? Have you played Depart and It's Full live?
No, we're playing Inferno live, the first third of it. Yeah. And we're going to play Paradise live too. We're not really playing any of the mellow stuff, I guess, yet. And the only reason being is because we just don't quite have all of the. We don't want to play a bunch of backing tracks or anything and play to a tape. Yeah. You know, we want to perform the stuff. And so, you know, we want to make sure, you know, we bought some foot pedal keyboard MIDI thing to help play some of those parts. And we're starting to work on that, like literally as we speak. And so that's kind of, we're just kind of building up to that. We're getting the heavy parts down. And like I said, we've been playing Inferno live this year, and that's really that seems to be the song that everybody likes in the set the best. Yeah. And because it starts out real slow, it starts building, and then it gets more death metal and more almost black metal, and then really gets intense at the end and before the solo. And so we were real surprised. Like we thought, how are we going to pull this off? And then we just played it, and it was like, that actually felt really good. And because it's a pretty challenging song to play, it's not real easy. But and we're playing Go Murder, Pray and Die and Blueprint for an Early Grave as well.
Yeah, that's when that's when I guess you know you're still alive as a musician, where you're like, you know, yes. You're playing this stuff and you're going, okay, I'm really gonna have to work here. You know, we have to figure this out. We have to put the time in. You know, you know, when you write a piece of music that's like 20 minutes plus, the level of concentration, I just don't think people don't realize, you know, you're not improvising. This is the same as the record. You're not improvising. Yeah. You can't because of the nature of the music, you know, and that requires an enormous amount of concentration to pull off. Yeah? Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. We really, I mean, Inferno is getting to the point where I can like headbang and do my thing, But yeah, at first I was like really watching what I was playing, and you know, now it's more muscle memory. So, it is. Anytime you put new music in the set list, it's a challenge because you almost have to learn it all over again. And like, what did I fucking play here? You know, like, what was I doing there? You know, I must have been high when I wrote that part or whatever, you know. But, like Mike says that one time, we were the song Mad Wolf, we just started playing this year off of Necro Eclosion, and there's this part, and like I knew the part, and I'm trying to show it to him, and he's like, I'm playing that. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, I must have been high when I wrote that. I would never do that.
I love that. That's probably, you know, for those listening, Necro Eclosion, that's probably the entry album for me. I think that's all of them work, and certainly the newest record is most definitely accessible. But that was the record that I kind of got onto the most out of all of them, and then went back from there. I mean, as we're just kind of wrapping up here now, what's the scene like with extreme music within kind of like Missouri, St. Louis, and you know, the kind of the neighboring sort of states? What's the scene like? Is it healthy? Is it not healthy? What's it like?
It's actually very healthy. Like the scene here in Joplin's actually really good. We got a venue here called Blackthorn, and they're a pizza and pub. Like it's basically an Irish bar. And like the bands come through to play there. Like they feed you pizza for free, you get free drinks. And you know, the shows always have a really good turnout. People support the scene really well. There was a little bit of a lull a few years ago, but now it's really picking back up. And then, like I said, you drive an hour or two north, south, east, and west, and there's real healthy scenes. Like Tulsa, Oklahoma is about an hour and a half, and that's a big city. And we're getting ready to play there here in a couple months again. And there's a place there called the Whittier Bar, and it's a metal bar. And our first show there, it was packed. I mean, you couldn't even hardly walk in there. And like, I'm like, well, who are these people here to see, you know? so it was amazing. And we made a ton of money. And I mean, I don't even like bringing money up, but unfortunately, you got to have it to sustain this thing.
It denotes that if the show's been successful from that standpoint, it proves the point.
Sure. And you know, I mean, it just helps the beast keep rolling forward, you know? And so yeah, it's always nice when it's a nice packed show and then you can buy more t-shirts and buy more records and buy more stuff for people to get, you know? And so, and you travel an hour south and there's like four towns, one on top of the other, and it's in Arkansas and there's like a college down there and the scene down there is really awesome. Springfield, Missouri is about an hour out and they got a pretty good scene there. You got Kansas City a couple hours north, and then just to the west of that is Lawrence. And I mean, they have huge bands come through both those towns. And, but yeah, as far as the local scene, yeah, it's fantastic. Like we can travel within a 5 to 6 hour radius and hit probably 10, 15 different cities and play to 50 to 100 people easy and, you know, sell out of our merchandise almost in one night sometimes. Yeah. And yeah, it's more like the scene used to be back when we were starting in the late 90s, you know, because they're starting to be more all ages places again too, which that, I think that helps a lot when you get the kids, cause they're enthusiastic, you know, they're, you remember when you're a kid and you're soaking up all this stuff like a sponge, well, that's what they're doing. And they don't give a shit. Like if you're a 45-year-old man, they're just like, these guys are bringing it, man. This is awesome. And they're just enthusiastic and they see the passion that you're putting out there and they really enjoy it and they're not jaded. It's awesome.
That's it. Like, you know, you'll be playing a show. I've said this a number of times before. You'll be playing a show and a kid will be watching you playing and you'll be his KK. You know, he'll go, fuck, this guy's fucking brilliant. I would go away and try and do my shit the same. You know, we're trying to do what he's doing. That's that wonderful cyclicness of metal that happens. It's really nice to hear that there's a really healthy scene there. I see a lot of festivals taking place in and around that area as well. There's some great fucking stuff going on there. That's really nice to hear. I've been reading some reviews of the newest album. You've been getting some really good praise and sort of from overseas, Europe as well, which must be really, really gratifying to see.
It really is. Like, these are the best reviews we've had for any record. And, you know, we were a little concerned about the 20-minute thing, you know. We were like, it's a lot to take in. And I feel like people that listen to this style of music, the most of them that are into what we're into and the extreme side of things, like they're into it. You know, it's not just some music to put on in the background. They're putting it in, they're sitting down, they're looking at the lyrics, they're looking at the cover and just absorbing it. And that's what it's meant for. And, cause that's what we do when we listen to music, you know, I mean, at least myself, I'm always speaking for myself, but I mean, I know the other guys are that way too. Because we talk about it, and there's just this kind of, like you say, cyclic. I can't say the damn word. There's this circle of energy, you know. It's like you get excited and inspired by stuff that excited and inspired the artist, and so it's just a big, you know, circle of good stuff, and it's just. I don't, you know, art is that way though. Any good art should be that way. Like I'm looking at a painting right now that our bass player made, and it's like, sometimes I'll just sit there and stare at it, you know, cause he used to do a lot of painting. He does it so much now, but it just blows my mind. And I got it right above my record player.
the LPs and the records and the vinyl that you're putting out, fantastic, by the way, Rich. It's absolutely superb. That's some great stuff there. You know, you must be seeing sales from Europe and stuff coming in for that. You must be seeing that. It's really good.
Yeah, we had somebody from the UK buy something this morning. And the guy that does the artwork for our records, or like the last three records, his name's Eric Sweet. He actually does the narration in the Depart From So Much Evil. It's like him. Yeah. I think it's for the best. Now follow me. Well, I'll be your guide. And that's the artist. And but yeah, we proposed to him this Depart From So Much Evil. Cause he's fluent in Italian. So he knows the Dante poem real well. Yeah. And he actually knows what it means. And, it's real close to his heart, I guess. So he came up with 25 or 30 literal paintings for this thing, and took pictures of them, sent them to us. We all looked at them separately, and he said, and we all picked the same three or four designs.
Yeah,
and I was like, wow, man. Yeah, it was cool to see that all of our collective consciousness or whatever,
you're on the same page,
zoned in on the same page. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was another decision we made. Like, okay, we're all going to look at these separately. We're not going to influence each other. And we all picked the same cover. We all picked the same back cover. And yeah, it was really cool.
Ladies and gentlemen, Depart From So Much Evil is the new album by Gravehover. It's been really nice to talk to Richie and hear how positive he talks about the scene, and how, you know, this sounds like you just had a blast with this record, and it shows because it's great. What a pleasure. Thank you very much for sitting down with us, Richie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate you having me. This has been a really enjoyable conversation.
Cool, man. See you again.
All right. Take care. Cheers.
Richie there from Gravehover. Really, super guy, and really nice to talk about everything from Priest and onwards into kind of the scene as it exists now. It's interesting to hear about other scenes in other countries that exist and how they are dealing with various challenges that we had ever since COVID and beyond. It's the album Depart From So Much Evil is absolutely superb. I really suggest you check it out, and if you can, you really need to be buying some of their vinyl, because they've really put some time and effort into this vinyl. And it really is quite astonishing, sort of the stuff that they've done. It really sets another bar. Every time you see someone's merch, and it's better and better each time. Gravehover are a perfect example. I really, really, really want to catch them live. It feels as an almost an incomplete experience listening to Gravehover without seeing them live. And I think you'll agree that, like, even if you go back to sort of their earlier stuff, there's some fantastic work being done on there. Kind of crust and death and all kinds of stuff mixed in a really amazing way. Gravehover there. Absolutely superb, and I keep saying this, don't I? I'm gonna get him back on the show. It's because you just run out of things to talk about when you love metal. You run out of time, because I don't want to make these shows too long. I like them to be fairly organic and fairly natural. And we talk about the stuff that is current to the band, but I'd love to get these people on again. Maybe some kind of desert island disc, maybe, where these people come on and we talk about music and tracks that they picked. That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Maybe we should do that. I'll put it out there in the universe and see what comes back. As always, just a final bit of business. The 9th of November at the Outpost, I have the Spoken Metal Show live, where you can get free tickets if you register now. And the 18th of November at the Outpost, which is the Spoken Metal Show live sessions, where we have a bunch of bands, currently Thrash Being Mortala announced. That's £3 tickets and £5 on the door. Please check them out. We'll do a lot more live shows. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you at the show.